good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the jewel in the crown of the federal benefits package, and that is the retirement system. And it was inspired by an excellent article. In fact, it's so good that editor Maggie Carter put it on the cover of NARF. That's the magazine for members of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. She made it the cover story, and it is intriguing. I learned a lot. It's incredibly important stuff. David Tobinkin wrote it, and today we have NARF's master of all things to do with retirement, David Snell, on the line. David, are you with us?
I am, Mike.
Hey, thank you for agreeing to go through this. We have a lot of interest from people. I did mention that we were going to do this show today in the column, and we have some questions from people. But before we go through this, would you agree that the retirement system, both CSRS and FERS, is the jewel in the federal crown?
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. And among the jewels, of course, are health benefits, but the survivor benefits are yet another of the important aspects of federal retirement.
Yeah, and this is something that, a lot of companies no longer have retirement plans, or if they did have them, they've dropped them, including some in prominent firms in the Washington area have just eliminated retirement plans. But this idea of providing a survivor benefit, what I know it's self-explanatory, but what is a survivor benefit?
A survivor benefit can mean several things as far as civil service retirements go. It can be a monthly annuity payable to a surviving spouse, as well as minor children. It can be a lump sum. And along with that, there may be other benefits, such as continued health benefits.
So the monthly annuity, that maxes out at, what is it, 55% of the annuity the deceased would have gotten?
Well, if the employee at retirement elects a full survivor benefit and was under the civil service retirement system, the older retirement system, they could elect to have 55% of their full annuity payable on monthly annuities to their surviving spouse. Under FERS, it's a little less generous. It's 50% of the retiree's annuity in payable monthly annuity amounts. So what a lot of folks don't, retirees especially, when they look at their monthly annuity, they see the gross and figure out on their own, well, here's 55% of my gross annuity. However, that gross annuity has been reduced. You got to pay for the survivor benefit, and that gross annuity has been reduced. So in actuality, the surviving spouse will get a gross annuity of about 60% of that retiree's monthly annuity.
That sounds better than 55.
Yeah. It's better, and not only that. Let's say the deceased only had a surviving spouse; there were no children.
Mm-hmm.
Had health benefits and was paying for family coverage. Now that family coverage is going to drop to self only. So, in addition to the 60% of the deceased gross annuity, they're not going to be paying for as much for health benefits care because there's only one of them. They won't have to pay that family plan. So, you know, while it seems like, oh, my dear, you know, can I live on 60%, these other things will add to it and make it a little more comfortable.
Yeah, and it's 60% more than a lot of people in the private sector get, too. And now, 55 is the maximum, 55 and 50. 55 for CSRS, 50 for people under the FERS system. Can you get less than that? I assume your annuity is reduced when you provide a survivor benefit.
Yes, you have to pay the cost to provide that survivor benefit. Yes, the under the Civil Service Retirement System, you can elect any amount to base that 55% on, any amount of your annuity. It can be half your annuity. It could be $5 if you wanted it to be. However, under FERS, you only have two choices. You've got the 50% and you've got the 25%. If you elect 25%, of course, the reduction in your annuity is not quite as much. You're only going to provide 25% of the annuity, but it's going to be about 5% if you elect the 25%. And everybody must keep in mind, if you elect something less than the full survivor annuity, that's going to require the current spouse to approve, sign off on.
Right, so you don't just retire and forget to tell your spouse about this. They have to sign a document waiving it. Huh?
Right, this came out of the spouse equity laws in the 80s. And there were people, believe it or not, that didn't provide any survivor benefits and never told their spouses. And in retirement, they died, and the spouse was left with absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So this is a way to at least get the spouses informed about the election, and they can discuss it with the retiree.
Well, in a place like Washington, and there are lots of federal centers, Huntsville, Alabama, Ogden, Utah, my favorite examples, there are a lot of married federal couples. So they're both going to get an annuity when they retire. Does it behoove them to provide a survivor benefit for the other spouse? I mean, granted, it reduces your take-home annuity as long as you're alive, but if you provide a survivor benefit, have you done the math on that?
No, I haven't. We do have a lot of federal couples that both retire. Some retire earlier than others, so it's an individual choice as to whether or not they believe that they should give each one a survivor benefit or not. Which one was making the most money? Which one was had maybe dependents? But it's going to be an individual decision.
Okay, David, and I'm getting the signal from the control room. Matt Wingfield is in there working with us today, and Julia, she who is everywhere, Ziegler, is also in there pushing the buttons. But got to take a short break. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM.
Hosts the Federal Drive weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Listen each morning for breaking news updates, summaries of the biggest federal news stories impacting you and your agency, and interviews with senior leaders about why they make the decisions they do about mission. Download Federal Drive radio interviews and read articles online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin is sponsored by High Point Global, experts in citizen experience. The Microsoft Cloud for Government.
The Defense Information Systems Agency is now using new security procedures to approve the use of commercial cloud computing services within the Department of Defense. According to Federal News Radio, the procedures will give component CIOs more discretion in deciding whether commercial cloud services match their risk tolerance. DISA says the goal is to help components make more informed choices now that military services and agencies can buy cloud services on their own. This is Jason Fornicola.
The Microsoft Cloud for Government is the perfect match for federal government services. With tools like Microsoft Office 365, Microsoft Azure, and Dynamics CRM Online, discover how the Microsoft Cloud for Government provides cost savings, rigorous security located in U.S. data centers, and hybrid capability with an integrated open platform, all from one trusted source. Become familiar with a Microsoft Cloud for Government, and you'll be prepared to move toward the future today. Visit Microsoft.com/cloudforgovernment.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there's a powerful secret that credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $5,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're NetDebt, and we're offering you free information on how to virtually eliminate your credit card debt and make your monthly payment affordable. To see how much you could save, call now, 1-800-200-2482. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes, and we could save you thousands. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. NetDebt. Live better debt-free. Find out how easy it is by calling now. For the secret the credit card companies don't want you to know, call NetDebt now and see how much money you could save for free. Call 1-800-200-2482. That's 1-800-200-2482.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with David Snell. He is Director of Retirement Benefits for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And NARF's magazine, N-A-R-F-E, which is for members only, inspired this show today because the cover story is survivor benefits. And it's one of the more important features of the, probably the most important feature of the federal benefits package. That is the annuity for the person who's alive and a survivor annuity, a survivor benefit for the people left behind. Extremely important, much better than almost anything in the, comparable in the private sector, and there are very few things that are comparable to it. Talking with David Snell from NARF, he's the Director of Retirement Benefits. And David, you were at OPM for a number of years, too.
Yes, I spent my whole career there, so to speak.
Okay.
Going back to the question that you posed
yes.
before the break, should two federal employees, when they retire, provide a survivor annuity for each other? And I said that it's basically up to their circumstances. But let's not forget that in addition to a monthly annuity, federal employees also have a thrift savings plan, and they also have Federal Employees Group Life Insurance. Now, again, depending on the circumstances of that couple, one could leave a survivor benefit if they thought that the other person was going to live longer. And in addition to that, keeping in mind that the Federal Employees Group Life Insurance can make a nice nest egg for anybody if they have made the right elections, and the TSP can also be given to the spouse. So, in addition to the monthly annuity, there are those benefits that people will keep in mind and make a decision about.
Right, you're right. It's a good problem to have, isn't it?
I'd love to have it.
if one is a Fed and one isn't, then that changes the equation dramatically, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I would certainly, if I was the Fed, I would certainly leave a survivor benefit, a full survivor benefit, to the spouse.
Right, and the other thing too that I think so many people aren't aware of is the 5-year rule and the eligibility for the federal employee health benefits program. If it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I don't leave a survivor annuity, if my wife was a non-Fed, she wouldn't be eligible for the federal employee health benefits program unless you've left the survivor annuity. Is that correct?
That's an important component. You're absolutely right, Mike. The health benefits, life insurance, and everything is based upon that base annuity. So if there's no base annuity, then there won't be any health benefits for the surviving spouse, even if the deceased retiree was in a family plan at the time of death. There has to be an annuity payable for that survivor.
Got to be some way to pay it by payroll deduction, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. That's so important. And the other thing is to deviate a little bit, but the 5-year rule, if you wouldn't mind going over it again, because it's one of these things, it always comes as a surprise to some people. And I have known 3 individuals now who had to extend their time in government. They had planned to retire by a certain date, and they learned about the 5-year rule. Fortunately, they learned about it, and they had to work another 3 or 4 years in some cases for that very reason.
Well, the 5-year rule is in order to continue the federal employees' health benefits enrollment from an employee into retirement, the employee had to have been covered under the federal employees health benefits program or covered as a dependent under another's enrollment in the federal plan continuously for the 5 years immediately preceding retirement or at every opportunity.
Right.
Lots of folks get caught on this because outside forces require them to retire earlier than they normally would. They don't have the 5 years. They can't continue into retirement. Fortunately, the Office of Personnel Management does have a waiver authority in circumstances that they think are egregious to waive that 5-year requirement. Not knowing about it is not one of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reasons that OPM would give a waiver. But if something happens and an individual was intending to continue that enrollment and for some reason just got cut off, they can write to the Office of Personnel Management and say, look, I'm retiring. I don't have 5 years, but here's why, and ask them for a waiver.
But it's one of those things, don't count on it, right? I mean, some of these health plans are so inexpensive that you can get at, even if you're using your private sector spouse's health insurance. You buy this insurance so you can get insurance, correct?
Correct.
Okay, insurance to get insurance.
You're right.
Yeah. All right. David, we're looking at the NARF magazine, and I should mention that in today's column, my federal report, it's about this show, about this subject, and NARF has agreed to let non-members read the article, so we've got a special URL in there. You can click on it and go to the story, the cover story in the NARF magazine that we're talking about, and I assume you can download it, but it is a gold mine, and it's definitely worth everybody in government reading it. Even if you're not married, there are other situations when you can leave a survivor annuity. And when you and I, David, were talking about doing the show today, when we were talking yesterday, you mentioned something absolutely fascinating, something called an insurable interest. And I mentioned it in the column, said we'd talk about it. And Andrea emailed me and said, please do discuss insurable interest, the reasons one might choose that option, and how would it affect one's annuity payments. So
okay.
You have the floor.
Oh, thanks. All right. Insurable interest is an insurance term, and it applies to someone who would reasonably expect to derive financial benefit from another's continued life. So in addition to the normal survivor elections for spouses or former spouses, if the employee is in good health at retirement and does not retire on a disability, the employee can elect to provide a survivor annuity to someone who has an insurable interest. The spousal consent is required if that person is married and does not elect a survivor benefit for the spouse, but rather an insurable interest. The person who is electing the insurable interest has to be in good health. That means that OPM is going to require that person to have a medical evaluation at their expense, not the government's, mm-hmm. but at the individual's expense. and submit that along with the application form. Now, there are certain people that can be elected as an insurable interest, and they are presumed to have that if they fit certain categories. For instance, a spouse or a blood or adopted relative that's closer than a first cousin, et cetera. Then there are other people that will need to submit an affidavit with the retirement applications from one or more of the other categories of individuals to OPM to explain the relationship and make sure they are indeed an insurable interest.
Could I leave this to the lady across the hall from me? I mean, if she was dependent on me for some of her income?
Absolutely.
Oh, I could. So you could leave it to a non-relative as well.
Yes. The affidavits have to state the relationship between the retiree and the person they're naming and the extent to which the person is dependent on the retiree and the reasons why the person might reasonably expect to derive financial benefit from the retiree's continued life. That all being said, and it's a great opportunity. I mean, it's a neat option for some people. I don't think a lot of people take it, but it's a neat option for some. But the other part of this is the cost.
Let me interrupt you there. We'll get back to the cost. Second, take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Be right back.
Why have so many of your neighbors chosen Ackerman Security Systems? They researched the others, and here's why they chose Ackerman. Nationally recognized UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring for just $18.95 a month. The only company with guaranteed response time, free to switch your existing service, experts in security for over 40 years. So start saving today and make the switch to Ackerman's $18.95 rate and get up to 3 months free monitoring when you switch. Call 888-999-1070 or learn more at AckermanSecurity.com.
And while you can't always be home, you can stay connected anytime, anywhere with Ackerman's Total Connect. It lets you control locks, thermostats, and lighting remotely with a tap on your smartphone or tablet. So remember, switch to Ackerman Security and get 3 months free monitoring. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Here's Mark Orndorff, former top cybersecurity official at DISA, heard recently during a live interview and online chat with Federal News Radio, underwritten by Lockheed Martin.
We've got to get to the point where we can accept risk in certain areas and drive down risk in other areas. And that's what the risk management executive concept is all about. Identifying where we can take additional risk and save some money. Identifying where we need to shore up our security protections to protect the most critical missions and getting that balance right.
Technology that enables cars to drive themselves. Routine missions to Mars. Innovations like these are changing ideas of what technology can do. So imagine what the people behind them are doing in cybersecurity. With intelligence-driven defense, Lockheed Martin proactively finds and defeats cyber attacks, even from threats that don't exist today. To see how, visit us at lockheedmartin.com/cyber.
Steve Cooper, Commerce Department's CIO, will join Federal News Radio Thursday, February 5th at 1 p.m., for a free online chat, moderated by Executive Editor Jason Miller. Cooper will discuss his IT priorities around operational excellence, enterprise-wide services, and infrastructure modernization. Register now for this free online chat at federalnewsradio.com. Search Symantec. This online chat is underwritten by Symantec.
The Vencore name might be new, but the company has over 40 years of proven performance in systems engineering, smart analytics, cybersecurity, and applied research. Find out more at vencore.com/WFED.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Defense analyst Nora Bensahel.
There's going to be a tremendous cut in personnel, with the Army going maybe to 450,000 instead of 420,000, simply because personnel are so expensive, particularly medical costs and retirement costs. DoD allocates contributions based on how many people are currently in the force. So the full benefits of that would be a long time away, but you would see some much shorter term benefits.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Okay, Mike Causey here. We're talking with David Snell, Director of Retirement Benefits for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And the subject of the today's show is the cover story in NARF magazine, which is about survivor benefits and some intriguing. This is complicated stuff. It's not fun, light reading, but it is incredibly important financially to so many people. And NARF has agreed, and in today's column, you can go to their URL, click on it, and you can read this story and download it. And they're doing this. Normally, obviously, it's reserved for members only, but this one was so important. Margaret Carter, the editor, and the NARF officials agreed to open it up to non-members. So do check it out, and if you can print it out, do so. David, you were talking about the cost of this insurable interest. What are we calling it? Insurable interest, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the normally it's if you're electing a survivor benefit for your spouse for CSRS, it's going to full benefit. It's going to be about 10% of your annuity. And for FERS folks, it'll either be 10% of the annuity or 5%, depending on what was elected.
Okay.
However, insurable interests are going to be based upon age, specifically the difference in age between the retiree and the individual they want to provide an insurable interest survivor annuity to.
Okay.
For instance, it goes from about 10% if the individual is 5 years younger than the retiree, all the way up to 40% of the annuity, a reduction of 40% of the annuity if the individual is more than 30 years younger than the retiree.
Right, okay, and which you can see why, obviously, that's an actuarial decision.
Right, because they're going to live longer, they're going to be paid more, so you're going to have to
One more thing before we leave this this insurable interest in the annuity itself. You mentioned a lump sum payment, so instead of getting a monthly payment, someone can get a lump sum?
Well, under the Federal Employees Retirement System, survivors could be eligible for a lump sum payment and a basic employee death benefit under the Federal Employees Retirement System.
Is that an actuarial decision as well?
No, that's actually an amount that was set at, and it increases each year by COLAs. And I think David Tabank in his article covered it well. Although we've had some folks call us confused because they thought it also applied to them. But the basic employee death benefit is a about $30,000 lump sum plus 50% of the deceased employee's final salary, and so that's a big chunk of money. And you can get that paid out in one lump sum, or you can have it paid out in installments over a period of time.
Okay, I got a question here from Maria in Atlanta, and she says this is a good one too. She says, I'm considering retiring this year, either mid-year or at the end of the year. My question is, the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. Currently, I have self-only insurance, but want to add my spouse just before retiring. Is this possible at mid-year, or do I have to wait until the open season? And that's a good question, I think, for several reasons. And one of them is, I would tell her to get it tomorrow if she could?
Well, I don't think she can. There are certain life's events that allow changes in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program outside of the annual open season. Getting near retirement isn't one of them.
Okay, it's not what they call a life event, which is getting married, getting divorced, having a baby, something like that.
Exactly. And, you know, for some reason, retirement doesn't seem to be a life event, although it is certainly an important life event for most people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not one that allows you to make a change outside of the open season.
The reason I was saying she should get it tomorrow if she could, which she can't, is in case she died the day after, then her husband would not be eligible for the coverage under the federal program, presumably.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean this is serious stuff. And again, I know some people, to save money, will piggyback on a private sector spouse's health insurance, although it's hard to imagine one that's better than the federal program. But they do, and then they lose it at retirement and have to start all this. And if they would just keep the chanting, wake up every morning and say, five-year rule, I have to have coverage. And in the case of a non-federal spouse, they have to be covered by a family plan, correct?
That's correct. So in order to continue that, if the federal spouse is a retiree and dies before the non-federals, they have to have that family enrollment in order to continue that and the survivor benefit. And while we're talking about survivor benefits, you know, folks, the statistics the latest statistics from the Office of Personnel Management indicate that the median age of widows coming onto the rolls is about 77 years old, but the median years that they have been on the Office of Personnel Management survivor rolls is over 12. And the point here is that people are living longer. They're going to be survivors or retirees for much, much longer time than anybody would have imagined 10, 20 years ago. And they need to be ready. They need to have that financial security in place. So,
you know, the other thing, too, I certainly felt this way, maybe others, but you just kind of assume that if you're roughly the same age as your wife, that the female will outlive the man. But in recent last year and a half, I have four different friends, a couple very close, whose wives predeceased them. And
yeah.
So it does work both ways.
It certainly does. And of course, we can't predict that. So better safe than sorry.
Yeah. There's a section in this NARF magazine article today about divorce. And since about 50% of all marriages end in divorce today, what is it saying?
Well, the Office of Personnel Management honors state court orders incidental to a divorce. If that divorce decree provides the spouse with a part of the annuitant's monthly annuity or a survivor benefit in the future, should that retiree pass away, then OPM is obligated to pay that if the court order is correctly written and turned into the Office of Personnel Management. So there is a survivor benefit that can be had without an election by the annuitant, but it's the Office of Personnel Management will have to honor state court orders that are written correctly and that provide that survivor benefit.
Right, and those can also, as I understand it, a divorce decree can provide health insurance coverage for the divorced spouse, although he or she will have to pay 100% of the cost, as opposed to 22-23% if they were a regular federal worker.
Right. If the court order, the divorce decree, does provide a benefit, a retirement mm-hmm. benefit or a survivor benefit, then that former spouse is eligible to enroll in his or her own right into the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, but there won't be any contribution from the government.
I wanted to ask you about what we're talking about, marriage and divorce. Do these rules for survivor benefits, do they apply to same-sex marriages?
Yes.
Okay.
Under the after the Supreme Court ruling in June of 2013, the Office of Personnel Management sent out guidelines. This had to do with the Defense of Marriage Act and striking down parts of it by the Supreme Court. Mm. And after that, the Office of Personnel Management opened up survivor benefit elections to retirees in states that were legally married in those states after June of 2013 and those before. But they and they will honor the elections. They had folks who were already retired had 2 years from that June 26th date, 2013, to get their elections in. Which brings us to another point about survivor benefits.
Mm-hmm.
People that have retired did not have a spouse at retirement, but later fell in love and married and wanted to want to elect a survivor benefit for their newly acquired spouse can do so within 2 years of the marriage. As Dave's Tabankin's article points out, there are people that were not aware of the time limit and missed out on that two-year period, and as a result are not going to be able to provide that financial security for their spouse.
Well, and as you point out, too, in the five-year rule, this is a case where ignorance of the law is no excuse. It's too bad you didn't find out about it. It's too bad you didn't have it in a pre-retirement seminar. But the deadline is a deadline. And we're approaching our deadline here, too. I want to thank you, David Snell, for being with us. And thanks to NARF and Maggie Carter for making this article available. If you go to my column today, Mike Halsey's Federal Report, click on the URL, you will be able to download this and read what otherwise is forbidden only to NARF members. But you can get it today and check it out. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back talking with Andy Medici about all manner of things.
Gloves are sure to be flying.
Norvig, what a big hit!
Buy your tickets today to see your Washington Capitals take on the Anaheim Ducks Friday, February 6th at 7 p.m. and the Philadelphia Flyers Sunday, February 8th at 3 p.m.
Alex Ovechkin, top right corner, oh baby!
Don't miss out. Call 1-800-745-3000 or visit WashingtonCaps.com.
Hi, can I get some info on your debit card?
Mumbo jumbo, mumbo bumbo jumbo, yada yada yada, disclaimer, fee fee fee.
Excuse me?
Blah blah blah, boo boo boo, fee fee, disclaimer, gibberish gibberish.
Can I please talk?
No.
Want a straight answer? Welcome to State Department Federal Credit Union. Get an SDFCU checking account today and earn rewards with your debit card. Plus, enjoy access to over 29,000 ATMs. Go to SDFCU.org. State Department Federal Credit Union. Straight answers, happy banking. Federally insured by NCUA.
Be honest. Will owning a bigger TV help you get ahead in life? Will another pair of shoes make you a better person? Probably not. But what if you could speak another language? If acquiring a new language excites you more than acquiring more stuff, then wait until you hear this. As part of its biggest language learning event in history, Rosetta Stone is giving away demos of its powerful language learning software absolutely free. For your free demo, call 1-800-300-2545. And Rosetta Stone has made language learning more convenient than ever. Learn on your computer or iPad, then practice on the go with your smartphone or MP3 player without ever opening a book or memorizing boring vocabulary again. Do you want more stuff, or do you want a language that will last a lifetime? After all, it's all about priorities. To try a free demo of this powerful language learning software, call 1-800-300-2545. Again, get your free demo now. 1-800-300-2545. That's 1-800-300-2545.
And now it's time for another FedGuard Factor, career essentials for federal employees.
For those of you who know how important it is to insure your career with a professional liability policy, there's a good chance you're getting ready to renew an existing policy. Now is the perfect time to visit FedGuard.com to check out top-flight professional liability packages starting at less than $300 a year. And don't forget, managers, supervisors, and all law enforcement officers are entitled to up to 50% reimbursement of policy costs.
Learn more at FedGuard.com. That's FedGuard.com.
Valentine's Day is coming up, and where should you turn for the perfect way to celebrate? The February edition of Recreation News, of course. Marvin Bond is the editor, and he has a ton of ideas this year.
I always have special deals for Valentine's Day. You can check out the Valentine's package, for example, at Chesapeake Beach Resort in Southern Maryland. You get accommodations, strawberries and champagne, and a $50 resort voucher. Find out more on page 7 of the February Recreation News.
Okay, so maybe you're not really into the whole Valentine's Day thing. And you know what? This song is kind of cheesy. Marvin, what should I do if I want to celebrate February 14th in a different way?
Every Monday, for example, in February, except for February the 17th, you can ski at Whist for just $39. It includes an all-day lift ticket, ski or snowboard rental, and a one-hour clinic. You can find out more about the special deal up at Whist on page 7 of the February Recreation News.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
It's no secret that government acquisition can be challenging for the acquisition professional and industry alike. Agencies are tackling the hurdles of buying for affordability and taking more risk in the acquisition process to realize more reward. Join AFSEA Bethesda on February 17th at the Bethesda North Marriott to discuss how government can change acquisition models and increase the number of emerging opportunities within government. Register today at afseabethesda.org/febbreakfast.
Federal News Radio's Tom Temin is on Twitter. Follow him at TTeminWFED for quick access to his latest interviews on the Federal Drive.
Your turn, Mike Causey here, and we're going to be talking with Andy Medici. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times and busy time. Andy, are you with us?
It's always good to be here, Mike.
Hey, thank you for joining us in the busy times with the budget. Normally when the budget comes out, we old Washington hands sort of yawn and say it's just a shopping list and doesn't really mean anything, and hardly anything in it will be enacted into law as written. But this one is a particularly interesting one for federal workers and military people, too.
Well, there's actually a few things in here, unlike my shopping list, that might actually get done.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is the pay raise. And as we know, even when President Obama can propose a pay raise, he has the authority to push that pay raise into law if Congress doesn't do anything. So this 1.3% pay raise, for example, if Congress does not pass any legislation regarding federal pay, and you know, that mm-hmm. will become what federal employees get. So it's a baseline number that really does
for
start.
Real. Yeah.
Yeah, it's for it is for real. And you know, more than likely, considering what happened last year when he proposed 1%, 1% became law and Congress didn't do anything,
mm-hmm.
there's a good chance that this pay raise becomes law as well.
So you may have pay raise creep for the remaining 2 years. Maybe next year it'll be 1.6, huh?
Yeah, you know, who knows? Maybe you can go all the way to 1.8, right? But, you know, I don't know if they want to open the floodgates on that type of money.
Better than a sharp stick in the eye, as they say.
Only a little.
You had an interesting story January 30th about the this panel that wants to change the military compensation system. And it looks like it's a pretty dramatic overhaul here. And I know Tom Temin interviewed some people this morning on the subject. But what are they talking about there?
Well, what it really is they were asked by Congress to sort of reform and modernize and streamline and military pay and compensation and benefits. And of course, that usually does mean cutting costs somewhere.
Yeah.
And what they really proposed, the short story is, it's kind of like a FERS for military personnel. Right now, you have a fixed pension system. You work 20, you get a pension, some percentage of your salary.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're proposing is still a pension, a smaller one, that combined with sort of contributions to the TSP that are matched by the service that you're in would create, for example, a larger pension theoretically, but it wouldn't be as heavy-handed on having to serve 20 years. People who are in for 10 years could still contribute to a TSP and still get money out of it, as opposed to leaving the service, you know, after a few years, 5 or 10, and being short on retirement because of it.
I remember years ago the GAO did a study. And this was back when the civil service retirement system was king. But their study said that only about a third of the people who go to work for the government, you know, raise their hand, take the oath, get a federal paycheck. Only a third of them actually retired from government, meaning the vast majority don't. And I would say that's probably true in the military as well. When you get into the sergeant's category and the officer's ranks, a career is likely. But if you're an enlisted personnel, a lot of people will do a couple of tours and then move on to something else.
Yeah, the commissioners did say something along the lines of, you know, 80% of current military personnel they leave service without any type of pension. And so they said under this system, you get about 75% would leave with something, whether it's contributions and some matching to a essential 401k account, or whether it's the full-blown pension system. You know, those will be open to more military personnel than ever before.
Well, I heard several commentators on television, and they just got it wrong because they said that the military people would be put into the thrift savings plan, implying that it would be for the first time. But your story gets it right. They're already in it, but I guess the change would be that the government would match their contributions up to 5% as it does for FERS employees. Is that right?
That's correct. What's interesting about this plan is that the TSP actually, it gets stronger the more people invest in it. Mm-hmm. And the people at the Federal Thrift Retirement Investment Board, they know this. And so they created a Roth option for military people because that would be more conducive to someone who doesn't get matching funds but still wants to find a way to sock money into a 401k account. But what they would get under the plan is they'd get matching. So they would, you know, choose the G fund or the I or, you know, whichever fund they wanted. And they would get up to 5% plus that 1% no matter what sort of guarantee that feds get right now.
Yeah, okay. One thing I wondered if this military proposal, although it's not linked in any way to the civilian thing, if it might not be a quiet stalking horse for some changes coming down the road for federal civilians in the retirement area.
Well, this is one of those things where, you know, a lot of people believe that, you know, military service members, they get... they have a sort of a special different type of treatment, right? The pay raises might be different, or the benefits might be different. And when it comes to sort of making them more like civilian employees, does that open up the vulnerability to civilian employees getting something less down the road? And I think a lot of people fear those sorts of things because if it can happen to service members, right, who generally get far more political protection for these sorts of things, it could happen to them down the road. And I think that's a real fear. I'm not sure if that's something that will come about, you know, the next year or two, but that's something that, you know, might feed into something, you know, after a few years when, if they've switched to the new system, if that system works, why not, you know, revamp civilian stuff too? That's a real fear.
Well, there also was talk in this of putting military people either into the federal employee health benefits program, which is probably impractical, or putting them into something like the FEHBP, where they would pay a larger share of their premiums than they do now under TRICARE.
That's correct. The commission, they wanted an FEHBP-like system, right? And they recognized that there are certain things they actually don't like about the FEHBP. They think military members should get a larger contribution from the government instead of the sort of 70-30 type split that federal employees get now. And it would have to include all of the military hospitals. And it creates issues with, for example, where your plans are, because a lot of military bases and installations, for example, are in the middle of nowhere. And how do you create a network out of that? And do you just hope that the prices are low? So what they were really hoping is that the military could create a system that OPM has that allows for competition, that can sort of fluctuate with costs, and they can sort of control costs. Because I think the worry for a lot of people is that, you know, they've been chipping away at TRICARE for a while now, little bits and pieces here and there. And how long is that going to be sustainable? And, you know, and do you switch to this? How much do you take away in benefits? And it's a real intractable problem. But what they are hoping for is a system that is run a lot the way OPM does. The overhead on FEHBP is relatively low, and that's what they want.
Yeah, the numbers are shocking to me that they said it costs OPM about $47 million to run the federal health program with a team of 100 employees, whereas TRICARE, which would really be about the same size, costs $314 million and has almost 3,000 employees.
And I think this is one of those situations where, you know, we all have issues with health insurance and with health plans, and we gripe about it. But this is one of those situations where OPM actually does a pretty good job of administering what is essentially a massive, massive program. And DOD doesn't do as good a job at it. Apparently, their overhead is significantly more. And, of course, the TRICARE is a more expensive creature to sort of control. But what the commission really wants is to be able to reduce some of that overhead and put that back into plans instead of having to pay so much to have that program run.
Yeah, and you've got about a minute. Can you give us a wrap up what you're working on?
Yeah, I think, you know, federal employees, you know, don't listen to the dismissal of the budget so quickly, because there are a lot of things in it that the administration can do without congressional approval. And whether that's reducing workforce sizes, you know, those are sorts of things that federal employees should really look out for and just pay close attention to as the year goes on, because some of these proposals, they're going to keep resurfacing.
Well, and it looks like both the White House and the Republicans in the House itself are going after the senior executive service in different ways.
And that's true. You know, for a lot of Republican senior executives, they're the most visible sign of when an agency does fail at something or when there is an issue. And so they think SES is kind of a soft target for reform, soft target for legislation, while the administration, they see that there are issues and they want to sort of revamp it. And a lot of the SES, the way it operates now, really wasn't the way it was supposed to when it was first proposed in the law. So they kind of want more transition among senior executives, among agencies. They kind of want the sort of floating people that they thought they were getting when the
mobility
SES was first
hasn't
created.
Happened, right? Yeah, except in the real law enforcement, I guess, at the IRS level.
Exactly, and they want more of that. They think that when ideas and people sort of spread around the agencies, that can only be a good thing.
All right, thank you, sir Andy Medici, for being with us. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good week out there. Remember, check out the column today and click on that NARF article about survivor benefits. It is not gone with the wind. It is a very necessary read for a lot of federal workers. Have a good week. We'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Many people wonder, what if? But at Lockheed Martin, we don't stop there. We create some of the most amazing technology on Earth and beyond. We obsess, we study, and we push the state of the art in fields like physics, materials science, engineering, and nanotechnology. As a result, our innovations define eras. To see how we're engineering a better tomorrow, visit LockheedMartin.com/futurearrives.
WEPA is a nonprofit association that makes group term life insurance available at competitive rates to civilian federal employees, their spouses, and dependent children. WEPA's program also has flexible coverage options. For example, WEPA offers civilian federal employees coverage from $25,000 up to $750,000. And as a participating group life insurance program, WEPA's announcing a refund to members for 2014 as a result of favorable policy claims experience. WEPA's refunded over $80 million in premiums to its members over the past two decades. To learn more about WEPA and eligibility for its life insurance program, visit WEPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
Premium refund amounts based on historical policy data as of 3/31/2014. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. The WEPA Group Term Life Program is not endorsed by the federal government. Coverage is provided by Life Insurance Company of North America and is subject to insurer approval with evidence of good health. This policy contains exclusions and benefits may reduce by age.
And now it's time for another FedGuard Factor, career essentials for federal employees.
You insure your house, you insure your car, why wouldn't you want those same protections and indemnifications for your career? In today's federal workplace, unfounded complaints and charges are more and more common. Legal fees can wind up in the tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. A FedGuard policy can cover you for a few hundred dollars a year. That's less than 1 hour of billing that any good lawyer would charge in such cases.
Learn more at FedGuard.com. That's FedGuard.com.
Be inspired at the annual Leukemia Ball presented by Pharma on Saturday, March 28th, 2015. Featuring a fabulous silent auction and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz automobiles, the Leukemia Ball raises funds for life-saving cancer research and patient programs provided by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, with a comedic performance by Jim Gaffigan and music by Michael Cavanaugh. Guests will enjoy a night to remember. For sponsorship information or to purchase a raffle ticket, visit www.leukemiaball.org. That's leukemiaball.org.